September 9th, 2011. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, it's Jeff Robbins here with episode 96 of the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. This week on the podcast, we've got an interview with Ryan Srama. Ryan used to be the lead developer on the Ubercart project. He is now the lead developer on the Drupal Commerce project. And Ryan will be speaking at the Do It With Drupal conference in New York City. That conference is happening October 12th, 13th, and 14th at the Brooklyn Bridge Marriott. And as of the recording of this podcast, there are still seats available. So head on over to doitwithdrupal.com and register while you still can. We've got lots of great speakers: Jeffrey Zeldman, Josh Clark, Karen McGrain, Angie Byron, and Ryan Srama are going to be speaking at the conference. We're really looking forward to it, and it's coming up on October 12th. So get in while you still can. All right, let's get started with our podcast interview with Ryan Srama. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
So I'm trying to think of the last time that you were on. We had you on a while back.
Ooh, last year, something about Ubercart and Drupal Commerce.
What
was happening and why and everything.
Well, certainly we should check in with that again.
Well, I'd be happy to, but really what's on my heart and my mind today are oral hygiene.
Yeah, topics. You were saying we were talking before the podcast.
Yes.
So, Ryan, what do you want to talk about today?
A blip from my dentist, okay? I mean, he says, only floss the teeth you want to keep. we can leave that one there. And if it comes up again later, I'm happy to talk.
Well, we want to get this word out to the Drupal community. You're sitting at the computer a lot. Think about your teeth.
Yep. Brush after those meals, after those coffees too, right?
Pretty much brush whenever you're not at the computer.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. That's a podcast. Thanks, everybody. So let's see. When we last left Ryan Srama, you were on the Drupal Voices podcast as well. I think you're talking about Drupal Commerce and stuff. But let's sort of do more of an overview. Let's first kind of give a background definition to people of what we're talking about. So you used to be the Ubercart guy, or one of the Ubercart guys, right?
It's Twitter handle Mr. Ubercart.
There you go.
Which made it pretty inconvenient that Twitter wouldn't let me just change that and to Ryan Srama.
It always seemed like such a good idea at the time. Like,
yeah.
how would my life ever change?
Jeff Lullabot.
So I was
spearheading Ubercart development.
And Ubercart was second generation, maybe even third generation e-commerce for Drupal.
Yes. Yeah, I think Matt Westgate started e-commerce,
the sort of e-commerce module for Drupal back in 2004 or something like that.
We did Ubercart. We started developing in the betas of Drupal 5, and I remember presenting it at Boston and feeling embarrassed after the fact whenever I found out. I think it was from you or from somebody that the guy that developed e-commerce was sitting in the audience, and I was trashing e-commerce at the time.
But this is the thing. This is the thing with all the e-commerce is just incredibly complicated, and it's really, really hard to not make it complicated. And you start off thinking, I'm just going to do this simple. And then it quickly starts to reel out of control and get more and more complicated. And then the people who are using it, and I'm imagining as you came in, you know, to look at the Drupal e-commerce package way back when, said, this is crazy complicated. I can write something more simple than this. And you set out to do that.
Yeah.
No one can fault you. I mean, I think that that's fine. And it, honestly, like, I think, you know, all e-commerce packages basically just need to be, we need to have new iterations of e-commerce packages.
Agree to trash and move on every now
and then. And it was an interesting thing. You know, if you were embarrassed about speaking with the e-commerce guy in the room, maybe I could be embarrassed about talking with the UberCart guy in the room. But UberCart also got big and complicated.
Yes.
It started out nice and simple. But then, you know, you start trying to calculate taxes and Denver, Colorado, and
you can work with your coupons and
recurring payments.
No, stay away.
Yeah, it's just really, you know, not to mention the security level of things and how nervous people get around that stuff. And well, the other thing about e-commerce, right, is that people who are setting up e-commerce sites, this is their at least one source of revenue for them. Mm-hmm. And so, well, maybe if your blog site goes down for a couple of days, no one reads your blog. When your e-commerce site goes down or doesn't work, oh my goodness, we've lost 3 days worth of revenue.
Yes, your bottom line is on the line. And if it goes down.
yeah. And so, so let's talk briefly and hopefully diplomatically about the transition from UberCart to Drupal Commerce. How did you end up starting the Drupal Commerce project?
Yeah, so the gist of it was we were sort of staring down UberCart on Drupal 7, and we had all the feedback like you've just expressed, and we knew the pain points and so on. And we knew that UberCart as it was unmaintainable because we were basically, and it's still true actually, you know, UberCart still isn't released for Drupal 7, but we were basically lagging behind 6 months to a year whenever Drupal Core had a release. We'd finally have a stable release on that version, which meant we could never really do the refactoring that we wanted to do. And so I think Drupal 7 was still in the unstable releases that they were packaging up when we decided, hey, let's just start from scratch and you know, oh yeah, we can get this done by the time Drupal 7 is out. But you know, good intentions aside, the idea was to rethink what we've done with UberCart 3x, and so we had the UberCore initiative, is what we called it for a little while, where we were going to strip out all the extraneous stuff from UberCart, or really the UberCore that was not
Essential.
That was an unplanned jinx there. Essential to what e-commerce is. And so that was going to be called the Uber Core, and the idea was, well, UberCart can become an installation profile, and everyone will be happy, and we'll move on, and so on. And unfortunately, that plan didn't come to fruition. What we ended up having to do was develop what we wanted to be the Uber Core in a separate project. And it was, you know, it was communication problems and just missed expectations, I think, with my former UberCart employer, that led us to start Drupal Commerce instead, and the approach that we took was much less of we need to develop an e-commerce application that does X, Y, and Z out of the box, and much more of we need to develop an e-commerce framework that has X, Y, and Z components that people can use to build their e-commerce website. And we particularly were thinking about European usage, when you mentioned taxes earlier, because VAT is not like, it's not that complicated, but it just has different calculation needs from U.S. taxes, and UberCart is very U.S.-centric.
The thing with e-commerce is that there are, for every rule, there are literally 150 to 1,000 exceptions to that rule. And so it's sort of like, it's a simple to calculate here. You just plug in these numbers. Of course, if you're over the border into, 6 feet away, you use these figures to calculate. And it's over here, you use these figures, but the math is all different.
And if you're exempt or if you're buying alcohol, but you're not buying school supplies, but your books cost this much.
Right. The clothing is not taxed. However, the alcohol is double taxed. So,
So that was sort of the transition there, was to Drupal Commerce to develop an e-commerce framework based on Drupal 7.
So, and that was around the same time that you started with Commerce Guys.
I started with Commerce Guys in February of 2009. We had our first ever Uber Core meeting in like October. And it was by the end of 2009 that we knew we had to call it something different and just move away from UberCard entirely.
Okay. So for people who are following, are trying to follow along at home, so e-commerce, the Drupal e-commerce platform, gone. Is it still around?
It still exists. I've met Gordon. I had this brilliant picture of myself.
Oh, I do this Gordon. Every time we talk about this, and Gordon gets mad. And I talked to Gordon at in London, and now I feel extra bad. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyways.
I just had, it was a fun picture of myself, him, and Lyle Mantooth, who's now maintaining UberCart, all at lunch together in San Francisco. unfortunately, Lyle hasn't been at Drupal.
Okay, so let's just say the first generation platform is the Drupal e-commerce package, which you can find I think it's probably, I'm not looking this up, but drupal.org/project/e-commerce.
That's it.
Yeah. And then UberCart, second generation platform, drupal.org/project/UberCart.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
No umlaut.
No umlaut, yes. Yes. leave the UTF characters to the Germans. And then the third generation platform is Drupal Commerce, which you can find at drupal.org/project/commerce.
Commerce.
Leave the E off for the third generation.
Yes. And I'm trying to be as unconfusing, inconfusing, yes, ear-confusing as possible.
And then Commerce Guys is your employer now. So
yes.
There's no project for that.
No.
All right. So how is Drupal Commerce different from UberCart?
Okay, so the main thing, as we mentioned, is that we've boiled it down to the kernel, the husk. We've taken, this whole array of what UberCart did and was doing and stripped out things like payment gateway integration and shipping integration and file download support. We stripped out all these things that aren't essential to what you do when you sell stuff online, which is list a product, sell a product, and maybe apply some taxes, and have we've implemented instead sort of a generic pricing system where all of the price calculations are being handled in the same way. So that it accommodates, your discounts, your coupons, your taxes, price lists, currency conversion, everything. So that's what we've done. We've taken all this non-essential stuff out, and we've said this stuff is still important, but it's not core. It's not part of the core commerce project. And so when I say Drupal Commerce 1.0 is out, which, hey, it's out from London. When I say 1.0 is out, what I mean is the core pieces are now stable. They're 1.0. That doesn't mean that all these other essential projects are done. That's actually my focus now. But what we have in the core right now, as of 1.0, is product type creation, all working through Drupal 7's field system, the add to cart form, shopping cart, checkout experience, which actually all the shopping cart stuff is handled by views now, including both the cart block and the cart form. We are able to push some views form functionality upstream thanks to Bojan Zavanovic. He's the best Serbian Drupal developer in the world. and so we have those in core from the what can you do with it kind of standpoint. So make products, different product types, sell them on an add to cart form with product variations and attributes and customizations and yada yada. Have line items in a shopping cart that you go through checkout and you're done. Have an order history and all this stuff on the back end.
So
and then, yeah, so that's, so that's there.
So what's not there? So you said payment gateways. So
yeah, so the core modules have a payment module that defines the payment transaction entity, but it doesn't say, and here's a credit card gateway. It does have some helper functions for credit card gateways, but we don't have PayPal integration in the core commerce project. We don't have authorize.net, CyberSource, to check out, whatever. None of those are part of the core project anymore. Although I do maintain, along with core, you know, a separate commerce PayPal, commerce off-net, commerce CyberSource to do this stuff. It's just not in the core package.
So most people are going to need to download a couple of things.
Yeah. You know, another example, and this is kind of maybe a WTF for a lot of people, they say, there's no shipping module in core. but we decided, well, you know, most people doing Drupal-based e-commerce aren't actually selling physical products. Not to say that shipping stuff isn't important, but it's not essential to doing e-commerce, which is I need to take money and I need to remember what I took that money for. But there is a shipping module that you can download separately, maintained by Jacob Torp from Denmark. And that module sort of defines a shipping line item type and a way to quote shipping prices in checkout.
So an advantage of splitting all these things off is that you start to get separate maintainers, separate, and honestly, like, they're just
separate release cycles.
I started writing the shipping module for or did a whole bunch of work of the shipping module. Boy, I'm dating myself now. I did a whole bunch of work on the shipping module for the e-commerce package in probably 2005. And
in a Perl script in 1999.
I was chiseling it onto a piece of stone. And it's just really complicated. I mean, tracking just simply like, okay, you're going to track the weight of these things in pounds, kilograms, maybe kilograms, no pounds, because and then you need to access the UPS API to get the, you know, calculation of what the, oh well, then there's the FedEx API and the USPS API. Now you need
DHL.
To create sort of a DHL. You need it, but what if we're, you know, Royal Postal Service and you know, now you need to create a generalized solution to access all of the different shipping APIs that handle them differently, and of course and some of them the Royal Postage Service probably, you know, only takes things in, well, maybe in, you know, but
stone. Six stone.
I still don't know how much a stone is, and then and then, you know, in the U.S. it's all pounds and ounces and
dimensional weight,
right?
How much does it weigh and the volume? Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah,
this stuff is hard. So. I remember talking to you pretty early on in UberCart, and one of the things that I've always found to be...
I have the picture still, Jeff. You and me sitting on the grass outside of the conference center, sharing lunch together.
We were so young and naive.
I was starstruck. I mean,
but
did I have to sign my Orbit CD?
Maybe. So one of the things that I've always found to be quite charming about Ryan Sarama is your willingness to just sort of jump in you know, to things where people say, no, but it's complicated and hard. And you say, no, this is going to be fine. And I remember that about UberCart back then. And UberCart started out as only shippable products,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
It was oriented towards physical goods.
Yeah, it was like, take OS Commerce and reproduce that in Drupal to sell. And what we were selling refrigerators and commercial restaurant equipment.
Right, eight stone refrigerators.
That's right.
And look up what a stone is, folks. It's a measurement of weight. I think it's 12 pounds. And so, you know, and at the time I was like, oh, I really like your idea with UberCart, but we want to sell downloads.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, well, maybe we can add that on. And then I'm thinking, what else are you going to add on? So you know, and so what happens with this is that someone comes to you and they say, we need to ship stuff. And you go, yeah, we can ship it. We need to calculate taxes. Yeah, we can calculate taxes. We need to calculate taxes to Boulder, Colorado. So for people who don't know, some states, Colorado in particular, has separate sales tax rates for the cities on top of the states. And companies like Amazon get around that by simply not having a presence in Colorado, in which case they can say, well, it's really up to the person who's ordering the thing to pay the sales tax themselves and calculate that themselves. However, if your company is based in Colorado, they have to figure this out. Mm-hmm. So there are all of these sort of, like I said, these gotchas in e-commerce. And so, and you find these things where you start out and from a software architecture standpoint, you kind of need to know what you need to accommodate in your code as you're starting to architect your code. And oftentimes with a lot of these types, and this is just one example in e-commerce, where you get these gotchas. I did not architect for this. So can you think of things like that that you learned in UberCart that really when you sat down to start with Drupal Commerce, you said, no, we're going to just think of this in a totally different way.
Well, I mean, the tax one, I can point that one on as just the first one. We realized, we actually need to calculate tax on a per line item basis. You know, because some products on the order are going to be taxed, some won't be. They'll have different tax rates. But then we also need to make sure that whenever we're calculating taxes, that can interact with when we're applying discounts. So, you know, we need to be able to sort, you know, when various pricing rules get applied, because you need to know if you need to calculate tax before applying a coupon code versus after, or, you know, stuff like that. So you know, changing the when and the where of the tax calculation, and particularly the tax rounding, because I don't think we were ever rounding taxes in UberCart at the line item level, which screws up VAT. So stuff like that. Like, that's just a ton of tax stuff that went into thinking about how we were going to develop our pricing system. And we decided, and, you know, we need to do it all through rules. You actually have to use rules in order to set up pricing rules, including taxes, discounts, and currency conversions, which we actually support in core now. We actually have currency conversion support, multi-currency support.
So you're actually using the rules module.
Yes. The rules module.
And can you explain to people what that module does and sort of how that impacts what
you're doing? Yeah. So, you know, picture yourself sitting at a keyboard in your favorite IDE writing code. And then now picture yourself in the browser trying to reproduce that same code, but beating your head against the desk because you can't figure out how to access your data.
If that's this, kind of then cool. This.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a scripting language. It lets you react on a certain event where you can perform certain actions if a set of conditions are met. And I'm only half joking. It really is a programming language. And if you're not a programmer, it will be difficult for to use, but it's a complex tool, and I think you can't dumb it down too much without just, you know, voiding its functionality, its usefulness. So what we do is we have various events scattered all throughout commerce, such as calculating the sell price of a product, where you have this set of rules that are all attached to this event that can look at their conditions and say, oh yeah, I should apply this to this product, or I should not, you know, don't calculate tax if the shipping state isn't Colorado. You can set up rules like that. So Amazon would have that rule. You know, if the state is Colorado, we don't need to apply our Colorado sales tax. However, you might check the user's role and see, this is a reseller. We need to apply the 15% reseller discount. And then after that is when we need to apply tax. And so because it's all in rules, one, you can create any number of new rules on the fly just through the user interface. Two, you can reorder them relative to one another. So I know that the early bird discount should apply before the coupon code applies for an additional 10% off. So you can reorder them and manage them all through the UI. What's the other thing? And also because it's all in rules, we know that we know when a change has been made to the price. And we actually keep inside of every product sell price a change log of what's gone into this to make this display price what it is.
Wow.
And so I can tell you, I can actually create, and people have done this. I don't have any. I gave an example at my session in London, but I forgot the URL. There's this cosmetics website that one of the Amazon.com style list price, $29.99, your price, $15.99, you saved 30% or whatever. And they were able to do this just by creating a display formatter for the price field that looked at the change log and says, oh, the original price was this, now it's this. Do the math and output all three prices. And so that data is very valuable, and we never really had that before with UberCart. So we knew we needed to change when and where we were calculating prices. We knew we needed taxes to come through the same channel as discounts and everything else. We knew we needed to keep a good change log of what's going to make the price what it is. And additionally, we knew that we needed to be able to calculate stuff with the price that wouldn't necessarily be displayed. So this goes back to calculating sales tax on a per line item basis. Whenever you see the price on the page, that price is data actually knows that Kentucky sales tax was applied, but it wasn't included in the displayed price. And what that lets us do then is sort of propagate that from the add to cart form through the cart to the order total. I have this sort of hidden price component that doesn't show up until I add it all together to the order total and then, you know, give my listing of the subtotal was this, Kentucky sales tax was this. And so it's this crazy chain of data that's coming from these rules all the way through to the order total and is being displayed in several different ways, even out of the box, and can be displayed even more ways, you know, through custom display formatters and custom views and so on and so forth. So it's really complex. And I
You've obviously really thought this out.
And so the way that we developed Drupal Commerce was I would develop, you know, pretty much in isolation with a few people in IRC and the issue queue for a few months. And then we'd get together, and I'd bring Damien Tournude, our CTO from Paris. He'd come over, and we would just get a big whiteboard, and we would just cover this thing with, okay, now what if we need this? And then what if they're here? And how do I want to display VAT in German stores versus French stores? And, you know, all this stuff. We'd just fill up the whiteboard. I'd take pictures with my phone, and then, you know, here's me, like, the next week, I'm, like, zooming into these pictures on my phone, trying to remember, what did this represent on the whiteboard, and I'd develop it, and that's been our iterative process here. It's whiteboard-driven development, and it's worked out.
Whiteboard-driven development.
Yeah, I mean, some people, you know, they like test-driven development. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
I like it. I think there's power in the whiteboard.
Yeah,
remember to brush daily.
Yes, and flossing. So that's the pricing system, and what I find interesting is that, you know, we never really got it right with UberCart. We thought we had a solution whenever we launched UberCart 2X on Drupal 6, but it turned out to be unusable. And you know, our experience at Commerce Guys with trying to deploy this in Europe is what said, ah, here's how we actually need to do it. And so we've re-implemented it, and now UberCart actually took out their price handler altogether for Drupal 7. So now you essentially have one choice if you need complex pricing, especially if you're doing European stores and have VAT needs and need to input prices including VAT, but show them excluding VAT for your B2B buy, you know, all that stuff. Like, you know, we've really tried to nail that. And especially, you know, Commerce Guys is based in Paris now. We merged with the Drupal guys from AF83 last year. And so we have our office in Paris, and most of our larger clients are now in Europe. So we had to make sure that it was solid. And so far, we haven't hit any real roadblocks with the clients that we've been doing. So that was one. Another one that's one of my favorites to bring up. As far as, you know, what did we learn about developing an e-commerce application from UberCart? And I will say, like UberCart is still, like, if you need UberCart on Drupal 6, you know, we'll use it, right? Like, Drupal 7 isn't going to be ready for everybody. But without UberCart, there wouldn't have been a Drupal Commerce. And we couldn't have developed this framework successfully without the experience of writing and building sites for years on UberCart. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that continually came up and we knew we needed to fix was the definition of what is a product. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the way that UberCart works in this regard, but you create a product node And then if you want that product to have variations, like t-shirt sizes, you just attach an attribute to that node.
Yeah.
And then if
one of the things I have noted about UberCart is that there was also sort of a problem with kind of the glossary of terms attached to things. There was like variations and then options and then classes.
And
then, you know, and all these different things, which were like, if, you know, and you could tell that they'd kind of been added on. It was like, oh, we've already used the word variations, so we'll call this options. But if it had actually been thought out holistically, it probably would have had a better.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, you had these attributes and you know, what we had adjustments. That was another one, right? SKU adjustments, I think, was the name of the tab.
Yeah.
And what it was you gave a SKU whenever you created your node. And SKU just stands for stock keeping unit. It's a merchant defined unique identifier for a product. So just in case anybody didn't know, and you have to have one. Like most for a lot of applications, you need a SKU, especially if you're interfacing with a fulfillment system or an accounting system or an ERP system, whatever. You have to have a SKU. And UberCart let you define that at the node. And then let's say I attached a t-shirt size attribute to my product node. Suddenly I have three variations of the same product that each need a unique SKU. So you'd click over to the adjustments tab and you'd have to type in different SKUs for each one. And then let's say you add in a size option later. You suddenly start selling 2XL. Well, UberCart would helpfully clear out all of your adjustments. So you then would have to go over and re-enter your adjustments. All right, and then let's say you add a different attribute. Oh, you have to go re-enter your adjustments. And if you have three or four attributes with six or seven options, and you go to the adjustments tab, then your site dies. So you get a white screen of death. And the problem was that we weren't a product is a SKU. One SKU is one product. I mean, if it's a variation of the same product, it's actually a different product. You know,
even though there's only one node, there's multiple. Each t-shirt size is a different product. If it has a different SKU, it's a different product.
Exactly. Exactly. You track stocks separately for them, so why would you say they're one product?
Right, we're out of large t-shirts. We need to order more large t-shirts.
Yeah.
It's not we're out of large t-shirts. Order all the sizes of t-shirts.
Yeah, and so we knew we needed to fix that problem. That was huge for us, especially when you're talking about import and export, feeding information into external like product comparison engines, working with your ERP systems, or even just wanting to know, hey, what are all the SKUs in my database? Because if you wanted to know that right now, unless it's changed in 7x, you would actually have to go and unserialize this data column from the product node to find all of the SKU adjustments. And so it's just a mess. And so what we did is we said a product is now a standalone entity, which is something that Drupal 7 lets us do. It allows us to do this. This is part of why Drupal 7 was so important to building the framework, because we built it around the entity system with fieldable entities and multiple bundles and yada, yada. If you want to talk about confusing vocabulary, we can go there.
Do you want to do a quick definition of Drupal 7 entities?
Yeah. An entity is sort of like we have, maybe using the word abstract in a layman definition isn't helpful, but we have abstracted out of node what made a node a node. And so an entity is just a generic data type. And it's a generic data type that can have revisions, that can have fields, and that can have multiple types of that same data type, multiple bundles, I should say, of the same data type. So in Drupal 7, you have a node entity, and the various bundles are what we know as content types, page, article, product, and whatever. We have the user entity. We have the, I think, let's see if I'll miss some, the taxonomy, vocabulary, and term is an entity, I think, type. And then we also have files are entities, and comments are entities.
And all of these things from a user or site administrator, site builder standpoint, you can add fields to them, which is really, you know, adding fields to things in Drupal 7 is really cool.
Yes.
And you can add, so you can add extra fields to a file.
Yep.
You know.
I don't know that file is fieldable.
Okay.
But you can add extra fields to comments if you need a 5-star widget on a comment form.
Right. By having this entity, this thing that is an entity, which is sort of a subunit of a node, or the, you know, potentially these other things.
You have
more flexibility to do things
beyond
what Drupal core does. And in this case, we're now into what Drupal Commerce wants to do, which is creating products that are not necessarily nodes.
Exactly.
And we've seen this in Drupal, right? Lots of things that were nodes because node was a fieldable thing, or because node seemed to be the primary thing, right? Using nodes as taxonomy terms, using nodes as
profile,
as
bio, profile.
Exactly, all that stuff, right? Right.
Yeah.
And it really shouldn't necessarily be a node because you don't necessarily want to do the same things that you want to do with nodes other than all the things that you do want to do with nodes, like revisions and stuff like that. So
coming back to Drupal Commerce, what we have is this product entity. Now, entities can have, in addition to fields, each entity type still has, you know, still corresponds to a table in the database that has particular columns, and these columns all get loaded into this entity's object. So this product, when it's loaded, has properties for, you know, product title, product SKU. I think it has a UID and a status column, and then maybe like created and updated timestamps. And I don't think that there's anything else in the actual base product entity. The price for the product is actually coming from a price field that we've defined in Commerce. And then if you want images on your products, you attach an image field. And then let's say you're selling t-shirts and you want a size attribute. Well, then you add a size field. And what you can do is we've done some additional altering of this whole field interface to let you tell Drupal or various parts of Drupal Commerce that these fields should be interactive elsewhere on the site. Maybe that's a kind of a confused statement, but the gist of it is I can attach a field to a product type, and I can expose that field to the add to cart form as an attribute field. And so what this means is I would add a size field to my product type. I would create four products that are blue t-shirt small, blue t-shirt medium, large, and XL. And then I create an add to cart form that includes all four of these products on it. Now, if those products don't share any common fields that have been exposed to the form as attribute fields, then it just gives me a select list where I can choose by product title which product I want to purchase. However, if I have fields that I've said this is an attribute field, well, then suddenly the add to cart form reconfigures itself so that the select list is actually selecting from these field values. So I'm choosing a t-shirt from among those that are existing on the form by the color value. So I would actually select, you know, or I'm sorry, size value. So size equals medium. The form knows, oh, that's product ID 2. When I click add to cart, it's going to add that particular product to the shopping cart. And then we sort of maintain this relationship too. So the fact that those four products were all variations of the same reference from the same add to cart form, that relationship propagates through to the add to cart form, or I'm sorry, the shopping cart form and everything. So if we wanted to, we could let the user change the product that's actually referenced here by, you know, selecting a different color or something like that. So that's the way that attributes and multiple SKUs are working. And I think I kind of skipped over the fact that the way the add to cart form comes into play at all is that it is a display formatter for the product reference field. So I would create a node type. I'd call this my product display node type, add a product reference field to it that can reference any number of my product entities. So I can say this field here references product 1, 2, 3, and 4. I would actually do it by SKU. And then whenever that field gets rendered on that node, it looks like an add to cart form with these dynamic select lists and whatever else.
So is the interface for creating products separate from the interface for creating nodes that display?
It is, yes, it is right now. I have a little asterisk by that statement, and a footnote actually says, I'm almost done with a contributor module that merges the two together. Maybe users are familiar, you know, listeners are familiar with the node reference module for Drupal 6 that would let you reference a node from another node. And there was a widget for it that was like, you know, create in place or something, you know, where you would actually create the node inside of the node form that you're referencing. And Bojan Summers from the core usability team has been really active with Drupal Commerce, and he has designed for me a widget that lets you create and manage any number of products from within this product reference field widget. So you can have a node type that has a product reference field that has that's displayed as an add to cart form, but the widget for editing this data is actually a product add, edit, update, delete form. And this is going to be very important for new users, because trying to explain this relationship. Well, so you have the product entity and it works through the field system to connect to the node. You know what that is, right? So I need you to enter in all your products in the back end and then come make a node that references. It just doesn't fly.
Because people think of it, I want to have a product in this listing. And beyond that, they want to click at the top of the listing, add a product, right?
Yes, exactly.
And then I put up a picture and then tell it the different sizes, and they want it to be all right there as opposed to having separate things.
But the architecture, you need
it to work the other way. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you need, your unique SKUs. You need to know how to get to that product data. And then also, again, we were really trying to make, and this is the statement I've used before, make as few hard coded assumptions about your business model as possible. That's the goal we're going for in core, is assume as little as possible about any user's particular business needs or business rules, because we want Drupal Commerce to be used for shippable products, but we also want it to be used for the next version of Videola and for the next version of COD and for the next version of this and that, where there are different types of e-commerce sites that don't need product nodes. In fact, maybe they just need one product on the back end, and that product just says donation, and that's all they need. And they don't actually have a donation page. They just want a single page checkout donate form, but they still want to have the same underlying commerce architecture. So that's why products don't inherently have displays, because there are a lot of different types of sites that just don't need product displays. Or they don't need full page product displays. We have a site going live, hopefully by the end of this month, that actually uses panels to build all of its product stuff. And it still needs the product data definition, but it doesn't need the product node. Other people have done it just using views to build a view of all the products that they sell.
Mm-hmm.
So all these different possibilities are enabled by the fact that we aren't using node, and we don't have all this extra node stuff encumbering us whenever we,
So we've got people listening, and they're excited about Drupal Commerce now. I think you've successfully got them excited. All this talk of entities, so 1.0 is out. Is it ready? I don't know if I can ask this question diplomatically. Yeah. Should people start building, what are the metrics by which people can use to decide whether or not they should start building their site on Drupal Commerce?
Okay. Yeah, I'll say so from a core standpoint, as far as I know, so you can take that for what you will, it's ready. The core itself is ready. It does what it's set out to do. It's created this framework, and I believe it's successful. And there's actually some third-party verification of this. I mean, if you read French, there's a French magazine that's kind of like a tech blog called Le Journal du Net that has taken Drupal Commerce out of the box and compared it against Magento, which we all know, like there's no comparison from an application standpoint. But this magazine said, you know what, Drupal Commerce succeeds as a framework where even the likes of Magento does not. And their final analysis was that, if Magento gets 15 out of 21 points, Drupal Commerce gets 13 out of 21, not because it's as flashy or as feature complete as Magento, but because it's more customizable and it's more build to suit and it's more framework, and they actually value that. So we're actually starting to see some sort of third party verification of the fact that as a framework, the core modules are good. And we've put it through its paces here at Commerce Guys. We've launched several sites on Drupal Commerce. Our partners are launching sites on Drupal Commerce. One of the biggest ones that we've been showcasing for a while was developed by our Swiss partner Can Do Image. I think they just go by Can Do now, because they can do what you need. And they have a site called eurocenters.com. Please note that is R-E-S at the end, not E-R-S. Eurocentres.com that has used Drupal Commerce as a framework to build this huge multilingual, multi-currency language course, you know, platform. They're selling language courses all over the world in different currencies, different languages, different accommodations, and all these other things that they were able to do just by using Drupal Commerce as a framework. And that's actually been live since the beginning of the year, I think, and they continue to develop it. So it's tried and tested, it's working, it's complete. The showstoppers for most people are going to come in contrib space. Mm-hmm. And that's why since launching the 1.0, my attention has shifted entirely to contrib with the exception of maintenance patches to Drupal Commerce. Because now we really need to get the contribs in place that would be blocking issues for the casual user. Development shops, if you have development capacity, there's no reason for you not to use Drupal Commerce now, and you'll be happy that you did. Because you, if you have the capacity to write a payment gateway integration or to customize the coupon module or to use rules effectively without needing a simplified user interface, then it has everything that you need. And I don't know exactly how many partners we have, but off the top of my head, I know of at least a half dozen guys that are actively building out not just commerce sites for their clients, but contributing back the contributed modules that everyone else is going to have to end up using. So if you're a dev shop, if you know your way around Drupal code, if you're reasonably seasoned with the back-end UI for rules and for views, there's no reason that you shouldn't be using Drupal Commerce. When it comes to the more casual user or lay user that just needs contributed modules to work, there's some things that you're going to have to either get support on or maybe wait to see if they mature or at least check to make sure that they do what you need. So an example is the shipping module right now does flat rate shipping, which is good for people that are just, it's flat $25. Unless it's $300 or more, then it's free. So that kind of stuff is ready and you can use it for that. But there are still yet to be written FedEx or UPS integration for that. Although I did help launch a site last week that does have a working FedEx integration, and hopefully that developer is going to end up, pushing that upstream. I'll be doing my part to make sure that happens. So it's the contributed module evaluation. What about your business needs is not satisfied yet in contrib, and can you afford to pay to have that developed? So stuff that I know is ready. That we're using the coupon module, we're using the address book module, we're using shipping. There's so much stuff that you don't actually need a module for anymore. That said, it's hard to think of you actually need a module for. Stuff like variable price products, where I want a donation site, you can actually build that entirely through the user interface now using fields and rules. So that's kind of a non-issue. You can build a lot of stuff just through the core modules. File downloads, one of our developers has released and maintains a file download module that we're using for a few ebook websites. It's shipping has been the big holdup for a lot of people. And that's actually once I finish this inline product form stuff, shipping has been the thing, the other biggie on my list. And I'm actually up at our office right now in Michigan working on helping out with this client launch that we're doing this month that is actually needing shipping. So there you go. Look for it by the end of September.
So this is a nice thing about having a company around Drupal Commerce is that as Commerce Guys gets projects and they build out stuff, Drupal Commerce keeps moving forward.
Yes. Yeah. And it's great about having all these partners that also assist us with, like, ICOS has developed like every UK payment gateway you can imagine. There's a guy in Brazil that's actually written integration for every Brazilian payment gateway, even though he doesn't actually use them. So we have some very passionate early adopters. So there's marketplace functionality. A lot of people ask about that. We had a BOF about that in London, and there's a plan moving forward. Lo and behold, it doesn't actually need that much work because of the way we've built around entities and have extensible access control to manage, who gets to see what order or what line items on each order. Like all that stuff, there's a lot that Core does to support this, but the marketplace module itself is sort of still in its infancy. So if you're needing to do, a multi-store site or sellers selling to each other or auction type stuff, that's not ready yet.
So marketplace site would be something like Etsy or something
where
each you have a single site that has different little stores within it and people selling their own things.
Yeah. And as far as I know, we actually are developing a marketplace site for a client in Europe. So again, that project is necessarily and assuredly moving forward. And so we have several guys that we're trying to get within the company to maintain these modules. So the burden is not resting on yours truly. And so you can look for modules by Damien Tornude, Bojan Zivanovic. He maintains a lot of our stuff. Recrit is Mike Vanetta. He's here in the U.S. And Randy Fay works for us now. I know he did some training for you guys. Mm-hmm. And he came in to do some product development for us at Commerce Guys. And fortunately for me, but unfortunately for the grand takeover the world of e-commerce plans, product development stalled, and Randy came to help me with Drupal Commerce. So so he's been doing a lot with imports. So integrating with the feeds module, there's a great commerce feeds integration. And then Bojan Z and Randy have also been working on migrate stuff. So there's a great commerce migrate module that has, as a sub-module, commerce migrate UberCart. So you can actually import an UberCart site directly into a Drupal Commerce site now.
All right. So that was the question I was about to ask. So
$1 million.
Yeah. So I thought I knew the answer to this, but it sounds like I might be wrong. Is it possible to migrate? You know, people are excited and they've got an UberCart site now, and they're saying, "Ooh, this is the third generation. I want to move to the third generation." How would they do that?
You know, I cannot share with you from first-hand experience, you know, how it actually works. I do know that Randy's been working with one of our clients the last few weeks to migrate their huge UberCart site selling file downloads over to a Drupal Commerce instance. And he sent out this this triumphant email. I think it was like 2 or 3 days ago now, but he sends us these awesome status report-like emails every week. And he's like, "And I have it working!" So it literally takes this big, complex Drupal 6 UberCart site and migrates it straight into Drupal 7 Commerce. Wow. And so the questions will be around how complex are your attribute implementations? Because we're dealing with attributes differently now, I'm not sure how complex the migrate UberCart module is set up to handle.
My guess is that, you know, each person's implementation is so complex that it would be virtually impossible to map everything over. Yeah. But it's nice to know that someone's making an attempt at it, at least.
Yes, well,
there's certainly things I've seen in Drupal that I thought couldn't be done. No one would be crazy enough to sit down and come up with all of the rules to migrate this thing to this thing, but then someone will spend a weekend and perhaps they find it a soothing exercise. Yeah. Well, I play Sudoku myself.
it's pretty important for us, you know, as a company to make sure that you know, that these 30,000 Drupal 6 UberCart sites are able to come forward to the, you know, what we believe to be the best technology for Drupal 7, doing e-commerce on Drupal 7. You know, hopefully, you know, I can't say that necessarily, you know, affects our bottom line as a company, but at least, you know, our sort of community, what's the word? Is it your ethos? Our community goal is not to leave people behind with outdated software, without a migration path, basically. And part of the goal with the Uber core, you know, back when it was even going to be UberCart 3.x, you know, the goal was to always have this migration path and not to see it as an upgrade path, because there is no way to upgrade from the crappy data model that we had to something that actually makes sense. You can't just update. It needed to be a migration script from the get-go, and that's what we have developed now. And, you know, the issue queue will tell you whether or not that works for everybody, but it's Commerce Migrate Project on Drupal.org. I was going to mention too, Randy works with Guy Schneerson on the stock module, so Commerce Stock. The only thing I think that module doesn't do is, like, you know, the Ticketmaster kind of, you've got 2 minutes to check out or this goes back out of your shopping cart kind of thing. It's good enough for inventory tracking and notifications and all that, and it's tied in through rules and the add to cart form and everything. But again, you know, each business's needs are so complex with regards to stock control and access control, and especially if you get into marketplace stuff, everybody has what seems to be a different understanding of how this is supposed to work. So you just need to find these contributed modules, evaluate them, and see, like, does this actually do what I need?
Right.
So that's the main block right now, and that's really what I'm giving my attention to make sure that contrib space catches up with 1.0 before we open up 2.x and then leave everybody behind again.
So. I guess contrib is sort of the deciding factor for both this migration and then the decision about using Drupal Commerce yet. Is sort of evaluating what your needs are. And starting to try and map those out to the core of Drupal Commerce, let's say, and then figuring out what else do you need? Do you need recurring payments? Okay, let's look at the recurring payments contrib. how can we make that work?
And I'll tell you something, Jeff. I think that you convinced me at London that yes, as much as I hate it, I do think we need a native recurring payment module. my strategy thus far is
so for
to
for punt. People who are, don't know what we're talking about. So for Videola, which is the underlying platform, you can find more information about Videola at videola.tv, is the underlying platform that we've written for Drupalize Me at drupalize.me. And Drupalize Me is a video training website for learning about Drupal, for Drupalizing yourself. And it is a recurring subscription model, right? You pay a monthly fee or a 6-month or a yearly fee or something like that. And the hardest part about building that site and ultimately about building Videola was getting the recurring payment stuff to work in Ubercart at the time. And, Drupal Commerce is the shiny new thing and we're interested and excited. But I keep saying, every time I run into Ryan, I go like, recurring payments?
Yeah. my strategy has been to punt, to say, well, Recurly is a great service. Let's integrate with them. But now Recurly is only a minimum of $70 a month. They're going for a higher price point. And as much as like I really love them. Like, I think that their service is spectacular. They do all the dunning management. They have the user interface for both customers and administrators and so on and so forth. So I would say use Recurly if you can, but not only did you say this, but we have actually had a client now that needs a native recurring. And the reason they do is because they want to do installment payments. So payment, I want to pay $100 now and then $100 in 3 months. We could do that with Recurly, but it's kind of a hack against the way that Recurly was designed. But if you had a native recurring solution that just said, well, I have a hook, and whenever this says I just charged, I can stop charging now, well, it would make a lot more sense. So.
Cool.
I can't promise this is going to be like the next thing that I'm going to develop, because I know that the issue tracker is going to like explode as soon as I put up anything that says, "Hey, I do recurring." So I'm going to like bide my time, and
it's a major challenge. I will fully acknowledge that. Process of charge them now and then charge them later, and obviously you can't store their credit card information. You have to store their credit card information, and different people. PayPal does a particularly crappy job of the recurring payment stuff, and they all have different ideas.
That's
for
my
the
biggest gripe. I mean, none of these payment gateway official like recurring solutions, they never tell you when a payment fails. They only tell you when a payment passes.
Yeah,
and so I think I can't remember if I talked with Angie at the time that you guys were doing this for Drupalize Me, but I was actually struggling my way through a recurring project at the same time that Angie had to dive into it. And there, what we ended up having to do was like have this cron task that just, every day is evaluating all these orders, say, well, was I expecting a charge? I didn't get it. Okay, I will wait one more day.
Yeah.
Well, day later. Was I expecting?
Still waiting here for PayPal.
Well, then I need to now implement the the recovery process. Oh, you have not paid us. You have 2 weeks, and all that the dunning is the word, dunning management.
Right.
It's quite difficult.
Well, the thing with AuthorizeNet is that the trick is that to get it to work, you don't actually use AuthorizeNet's.
Yes.
The thing that they call their recurring payment.
ARB.
You don't use that. You use a different thing, and it works a whole lot better. So
early.
Yeah.
So AuthNet is the same way. I don't think they don't notify if a payment fails. And I'm pretty sure. Let's see. I think it was AuthorizeNet. I was literally on tech support and trying to find out how can I be notified when a payment fails. And I'm quite sure they said, oh, well, you can get an email. Like, great. So I need to start parsing email determine that I need to get a new credit card from somebody. Awesome. So that's when I was like, well, surely Recurly can do this. And lo and behold, Recurly, what Recurly does is the reason it's so great is that they do store credit card data. They are PCI level 1 compliant, and they can store credit card data
Their servers are in a tank somewhere.
Yes.
With men standing with guns outside of them.
Yep. And they floss the server daily.
always floss daily.
So then they actually just process each recurring charge as a new transaction with your gateway. And so what we need to do natively in Drupal is just use like authorize.net CIM, where you can store like a card on file, and they'll store it at auth.net. They'll give you a little token. All we have to do is just store that token and start, you know, attempting the charge ourselves. Store the tokens, store the expiration dates so we know when a card's expiring. And it's not that bad. Like it's not that difficult. I think the biggest problem was that UC Recurring was a module that I wrote, and it was like, you know, my first time writing a recurring thing without knowing what you need to do. And I wrote it horribly. We actually rescued a client that somebody had implemented recurring for them by storing unencrypted credit data in the database.
No.
But the problem was that UC Recurring let them do it. and you know, I think, you know, the module labeled this as, this is an example method. You're not supposed to use it in production, but it got used in production.
Wow.
So the problem wasn't just that recurring is complicated. The problem was that the module was a poor implementation.
Yeah. I do think that the UC Recurring is using the authorize.net stuff.
It is now,
properly now and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think there was a patch to remove the bad stuff from that module. And then additionally, I just plus one to patch in the Uber card issue queue of all places that removed some of the credit card debug mode stuff from core. It was, again, another bad idea to let people test, you know, insecure credit card, you know, purchases while they're developing the site. But people decided, oh, I can actually just use this in production, and then I have the credit card number. Great.
Yeah.
So they've removed that from
again,
Uber Card and 7X.
For people who are listening to us react and not quite understand why we're reacting, don't store the credit cards in your game. Let's see. Where should we start with this? Well, first of all, most credit card authorization companies, insurance companies, any attorney, when you're storing the credit cards in your database, you are in the line of fire.
Yes.
You are opening yourself up to, you're taking on the security of, you know, if your site gets hacked, all these credit cards could get released. And this actually happened to Sony. not too long ago. Yep. And one of the things that's wonderful about open source is, you know, all this code that we can get for free and all these eyes on it and the increased security and stuff like that. However, there's also sort of no canonical person that you can say, you said that this was secure and my site would never get hacked.
Yeah.
Although Drupal is super secure and it has a very good security history, you can't go up the chain of command and say, well, you're suing me, I'm going to sue them. For those combination of reasons.
The second you say, I was on shared hosting, I thought it was safe.
Right. Yeah,
lost.
That kind of stuff. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, my site couldn't get hacked unless, of course, this person was another user on the same server. All that kind of stuff. So, yes, needless to say, do not store the credit cards on your own server. And one of the ways that you can get around that is that some of these credit card services, authorize.net in particular, does that for you.
Yep.
And they do have these servers that are surrounded by tanks and men with guns and
floss
things and lots of dental floss. and we'll take care of all of that for you. And you might, you know, you're much better off using that than doing it yourself. However, when it comes to charging that credit card again, how would you do that? Well, AuthorizeNet has some services.
And I'm actually going to write a module for that next week. We actually just had a client come through that needs card on file payment. They don't actually need to do recurring, But they just need customers to be able to save their credit card on file.
Yeah,
and so we can do that with CIM.
Like iTunes, right?
Yes, exactly. Amazon.com.
Yeah, Amazon.com. Yeah. One click kind of thing. We've got your credit card. We'll just charge your credit card. But that stuff needs to be stored securely, and you're really better off using someone who just does that.
So, yeah. And so the good part, too, is once I get this module developed that does card on file, well, that's basically the first step toward a native recurring system, right?
Yeah.
It'll just be more modular. The recurring module will just depend on the card on file module. That's that. So.
I love it. So you're coming to speak at Do It With Drupal this year?
Yes, sir.
Is this the third Do It With Drupal conference that you've come to speak at?
It is, yeah.
You're
I'm honored.
You're
I really
a regular.
Enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, you do such a great job. You're such a great, not only are you a great programmer, but you're a great orator, speaker, and ultimately an educator. You are able to explain stuff that mere mortals can understand. And we like to get those speakers come and speak at Do It With Drupal. So what are you going to talk about at Do It With Drupal this year?
Well, I may spare them the oral hygiene talk, but
I think you can fit it in. What you want to do is you want to bring it up sporadic, like throughout, like let's say you're doing sort of an hour long discussion, just every so often, kind of bring it up as a little reminder.
And only floss the teeth you want to keep. but no, I will be doing what I'm sort of developing the idea still. I'm calling it a Drupal Commerce show and tell. And so the idea is that I normally go to conferences and I get up on stage and I spend about 15 minutes giving the overview of Drupal Commerce. Here's the project. Here's a brief history. Here's the ecosystem. Here's some live sites and what it does. And then I spend the last like 30 to 45 minutes doing an incredibly fast demonstration of all the core features. And it can be overwhelming. I actually got like several rounds of applause doing this in Chicago because it's exciting. So it can be overwhelming, but it is exciting to see just how much you can do just with the core modules using views and roles and the core field system and all that stuff. So I think people really enjoy it, but I think it's even more helpful to show this stuff in the context of either live sites or at least, you know, decently developed example sites. So I'll be doing a show and tell through some live projects and then also through, I'm still trying to figure out who I want to get to send me a legal notice this year, but,
The last Do It With Drupal conference, Ryan cloned Etsy. In Drupal Etsy, and it was like pixel perfect. He created a website called Dretzy, Drupal Etsy, and it was like exactly Etsy. It was like amazing. And the first day of the Do It With Drupal conference,
got a
cease and desist.
Legal founded.
Yes, Etsy was kind enough to let us keep the site up throughout the Do It With Drupal conference. And then we had to take it down. So it's a shame. There are pictures of it around that you can find every so often. But we're building Netflix in Drupal for this year.
Oh, nice.
Blake Hall is building Petflix. So,
is that the subscription service for kittens?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. I'm not sure if it's for videos for your pet to watch or if it's video about pets to watch. Or perhaps both.
I'm sorry. Then I'm thinking of another idea that we were bandying about at DrupalCon of actually like a pet subscription service because I love kittens, but I don't want a cat.
Oh.
So what if I could get mailed a kitten?
Oh, just... Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, especially kittens, right? Because they get to be cats so quickly.
Yes.
You know, you want to keep your kittens fresh.
So you just have a subscription service for kittens.
You always have kittens around your house. How does that work? They never seem to grow up into full-grown cats.
If that doesn't sound like a venture capital-backed idea, I don't know what it is.
I think we may have stumbled onto something.
So I'm actually thinking with Steve Jobs out of the picture now at Apple that it's a good time to clone the Apple store.
Yes. They're very confused over there right now.
Yes, exactly. I won't get the legal notice until the next week.
Yeah. Have you seen or heard about my talk? It's had several titles over time, but it was called Whole Lot of Drupal last.
No.
So this talk, I've done it as a keynote at several. I did it last as a keynote talk in DrupalCon DC, or Drupal Camp DC, excuse me, and Capital Camp, they called it, it being in the nation's capital. It's a bit of a circus sideshow of a talk. The idea is that I show, I think it's about like 75 or 80 Drupal sites, just sort of, you know, kind of a showcase of sites to see what's, you know, what the common patterns are, who's using Drupal, just because I feel like people go to these conferences and don't get a chance to kind of see Drupal in action, you know.
Yeah.
And then the other half, so that's half of it. That's 25 minutes of a 50-minute talk. And then the other half of it is building an entire Drupal e-commerce site from scratch. I build a book
4.6 with the e-commerce module or
Ubercart. And so, you know, it was building out a bookseller website, but you know, again, here again, like people want to see, just, they want to see it done. They, you know, there's that feeling of like, I saw somebody do it. I could do that, you know? And, I think that there's something in that, like just showing people how to build a Drupal commerce site, you know, like from scratch. You know, I did some tricks where I recorded videos, so I wasn't actually, you know, waiting, because there's that problem when you're watching someone do something, you're like, I gotta click here, I clicked in the wrong spot, I typed the wrong thing,
and the Wi-Fi's down,
exactly. And so what I was able to do was sort of condense it down and sort of speak over it, and sort of narrate as the site's being built, but
be in HD with,
but yeah,
put a soundtrack to it.
It's me talking.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is just a fascinating thing.
If I do say so myself. that's what we've
Apple
done.
Store.
The reason I wanted to do the Apple Store is because I'm really excited about the way the add to cart form works in Drupal Commerce, and that out of the box, this form knows that it references, you know, 20 different variations of the same product. So you think, I have a MacBook Air. Am I getting the 11, 13, or 15-inch version? Am I getting, you know, this processor, the upgraded processor, 2 gig or 4 gig?
You're going to do all that, customized.
All these things, right?
Whoa.
Yeah, and so the way the add to cart form works is I would have to create a unique product on the back end for every variation, which you can actually do simply using a tool called Commerce Bulk Product Creation. So, like, I would set up my product type, set up all the different options, and then create every variation with a click of a button. So I can do that. And then what the form does is it's actually, it has attribute dependencies. So it knows that if I change, let's say I'm selling t-shirts, and it knows if I have 4 colors, 4 sizes, but small does not come in red, it only comes in the other 3, it will update the select list to only show the available options.
Right. So you can only get the high-end processor in the 17-inch screen.
Exactly. Okay. Additionally, whenever you change options, the form rebuilds. And it's because it's all handled through Ajax. And the way that Ajax works in Drupal 7 is, you know, if I click a button or change a list or something that triggers an Ajax rebuild, it's going to validate all the input from the form. And then my form elements, you know, validation, a validation handler will say, rebuild this form. You know, you do this in the form state and stuff and whatever. So then that form gets rebuilt. And then my Ajax refresh callback or whatever will send back just the portion of the form that needs to be replaced on the page. So let me make this a little more tangible. If I change the size of the t-shirt to XXL and I have to charge an extra dollar for XXL, the page, you know, the form will sort of refresh itself, and that entire form will be dropped back into the page, rebuilt, and everything. Not only that, though, I can say, also update these elements elsewhere on the page. So I can deliver this set of Ajax commands that change other parts of the page as it's already been rendered. So not only does the form rebuild itself and show the new options, you know, the color that goes with this size or the processor that goes with this frame, I can also update the image that's displayed on the page from the product. I can update the price. So I can have this price field that's floating down the side of the page that's dynamically updating as I choose different options from this add to cart form. And whenever that form rebuilds itself, it sort of resets itself to know that it's which product it now references, which product is currently represented by the options that have been selected on the add to cart form. Those are the fields that I need to re-render and then replace throughout the page. And so all this works out of the box in Drupal Commerce. And so you're getting this Apple Store like magical product builder form just for free out of the box. And I really want to showcase that.
Yeah, do it. Apple Store. Well, that's great. And Apple's not going to sue us.
No, they'll just send us a legal takedown notice.
Yeah. Apple, I don't think that Apple is always very friendly. They're not litigious at all. I don't even think they have any lawyers on staff. Let's do it.
maybe we can find some way to infringe on their patents.
Well, this whole like fantasy site kind of thing has been historically such a great learning experience because, you know, you're building sites that people know. We built Craigslist, we built Twitter, we've built Flickr, all in Drupal, and it's sort of like mapping that functionality of something that you know. Like when you start talking about how the form works for building a custom computer in the Apple Store, those of us who are Apple users exactly. I know what you're talking about. And there's not that process of trying to come up with the example that you're trying to get people to understand the use case. Yeah. The use case is out there. Bang, we know how Craigslist works. Now, how would you build that in Drupal?
Another cool thing that people have been doing, and I'll have to find a URL, and I'll put it in the comments whenever this podcast goes up, is that they wanted to use images to select a color. You know, they don't want to just have a drop down that says red, green, blue. They want color swatches that show the actual color of the lipstick or of the fabric. And so there's this cosmetics website that went live in France maybe last month or something, where what he's done is his image or his color field, so this attribute field for color, he made a taxonomy reference field. So instead of just adding a select list to his product type, he added a taxonomy term reference field. And then that in turn, like that vocabulary, has all the different colors that he needs. Well, since taxonomy is also an entity, he has attached image fields to these terms so that he can then upload the color swatch as he's, you know, defining the different colors. And then he just has a simple form alter that takes... whenever you have an attribute field exposed to the add to cart form, you can determine which widget to use. So should it use a select list or radio buttons? So he said, make this radio buttons, and then his form alter, you know, just adds the theming necessary to make those radio buttons appear as the color swatch from the taxonomy term that color identifies. And so he was able to do that with almost, you know, almost no programming, we'll say. I mean, it's a very small module, and you know, he's you know, contributed that back in the issue queue. So showing examples like that where people always want to customize the add to cart form, and they really want the page to dynamically update. And Drupal Commerce really does support this. And in the process, it's knocked out, like, you know, several different contributed modules for UberCart 6X. They're just not necessary anymore. So we've sort of had this same effect that Drupal Core did. You know, whenever Drupal brought fields into core, suddenly all these different modules were deprecated. And when it brought image styles into core, suddenly image caches deprecated. And so we've had that same effect from UberCart with Drupal Commerce, where since we're using views, you suddenly don't need this custom cart block module because you just have to change the view to make the different cart block. And we don't need, you know, an attribute dependency module or an option image module because that's just, you know, there for you now. So that's why I love Drupal Commerce. It is a lot of fun to work with, and it's a lot of fun to build sites with. We enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Ryan, for so much for coming on the podcast and
my pleasure.
Teaching people about oral hygiene.
Yep. I do recommend mouthwash as well, a good rinse before flossing, actually, and then brushing.
We will see you in New York City, in Brooklyn, New York, for Do It With Drupal in October. If you are listening and are not registered for Do It With Drupal, doitwithdrupal.com for more information about that. And
won't be disappointed.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. We've got some really great speakers this year, and
I can't wait to meet the My Starbucks card guy. Is it Jonathan Stark? I really tried to use that. Unfortunately, every time I went near Starbucks, it was back at $0, and so I failed.
Yeah, we love it when speakers at our conferences like make a new name for themselves.
Yeah.
Jonathan when we booked him, had sort of made a name for himself as he wrote a book called Using HTML5 and CSS3 to make apps, basically. And he also has been involved in JQ Touch and Phone Gap for creating apps using basically just HTML5.
Yeah.
But for people that don't know, he's a hacker, and he did a thing where he put his Starbucks card online and allowed people to both use it and add money into it. Anyone could then go and take this picture on their phone, just a JPEG picture or whatever it was, and bring it to Starbucks, and they can scan it. They've got optical scanners there that they use for there's another iPhone app, which basically
the official Starbucks app,
right, which replaces your Starbucks card. But with this, you could go and maybe there would be a free coffee on there for you, and they'd scan it, and if you felt really good about that, you could go and add money in and stuff. And it was this really cool sort of give a penny, take a penny thing.
There's one guy though that used it as a give a penny, take $500.
Yeah, somebody hacked it. He ruined it for the rest of us. And then Starbucks, I think, eventually shut it down. Jonathan actually lives only about 3 miles from me here in Providence, and we were going to do a podcast last week and talk about this, but with the hurricane that came through here, it knocked out my power. And so anyways, I hopefully will get him on a podcast, but if not, he will certainly be at Do It With Drupal. And so will you, getting sued by Apple. I'm looking forward to it. This is exciting. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Ryan.
Yep. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.